Hello and welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. I am your host, Garrett Tufte, coming to you from this snowy day in Kansas City here on Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2022. That is 02/02/2022. And it is Groundhog Day again. for those of y'all out there who enjoy that movie, I really do myself. And I look back to my favorite Groundhog Day, which was a couple years ago in 2020, February 2nd, 2020, where the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl. That was a good one. Unfortunately, they did not this year. In fact, they just recently lost the AFC Championship to the Scoundrels. The Scoundrel Bengals just this last weekend. But nonetheless, it is a snowy day out there. I thought the snow was going to go and hit Altoona, but it went ahead and hit us here. Okay, that's enough Groundhog Day jokes. nonetheless, it's good to be back. It's been a while since I got on the horn with y'all talking my extemporaneous verbal essays and given my thoughts on contemporary events as well as some of my own economic and political theory. And on that note, I think I might just jump in here and go on a little bit about some basic economics that can help to just get folks out there for y'all to kind of understand like a baseline from whence we can look at how we might have the various, I might say, alterations, intentional changes and alterations to an economy in order to benefit not only the individual but also the society. And that baseline example that lots of times I'll generally think on, but it's been brought up in other places, is when you look at, let's say you take 100 people in one town. You say there's a town with 100 people. All right. And each one of them has $100. Or it could be $1. It could be 100 seashells, or it could be 100 coins. Or in any case, this is 100 units of denomination for which they use to exchange for whether it's products or services or anything else. So you start off with that, and then you can go from there and see what happens when you add things like, let's say, taxation, or you add things like a property tax, or you have other changes to that basic model. You can start to get an understanding of what those things will do that much better than looking into our society and looking at the stats that we have and trying to interpret what that means as an alteration to the previous alteration. So so this is clearly looking at it this way is an intellectual exercise. It's a thought experiment, you might say. But nonetheless, it's very useful because the world as it stands, and clearly our lives, are continuous now. It's always flowing. It's always in the flow. So you can't stop it in any one point and be like, you can take a snapshot every once in a while, but that snapshot is in the flow of movement. For us to get a handle on how an economy really works we have to utilize to some extent some logic that requires hard, numbers, as it is. So we're going to use a snapshot here, and this one is 100 people in a town with $100 each. So if you start with that, and let's say they're all adults, men, women, whether they're married or not, we can add some other metrics to this as one wishes, in order to perhaps make it more applicable to whatever stat that you're looking to examine, or make it a little more complex in order to see how one thing would change when you add a new variable. So, say 100 people in a town with 100 bucks each. Say they're all single, and they're all living in, they all have their own house or some such thing. Now, what are they going to do? Well, each person's going to do their own thing. Ultimately, they're going to have needs. So this goes to this, you add in the hierarchy of needs after this, and you have food, water, and shelter. Clearly, something like this, you're going to have rain, you're going to have snow, you're going to have, everybody needs shelter. Everybody needs food, and everybody needs water. So these are going to be the three things that are going to be paramount in first order for everyone in that town to achieve for themselves, to gain for themselves on a daily basis, to have that. Now, food and water, since these are consumables, so this is going to be a regular thing. This is going to be something they need every day. And shelter is something that that can be like a product. You can get it once, and they can hang on to it for a long time. As long as you've got it, then you're good, type of thing. I could also add things like electricity and heating and that sort of deal. But really, it starts with those three. So that being the case, and you have 100 people with 100 bucks each in this little town, each of those 100 people is going to need to go out there and get some food, right? So every one of them is going to have to go out and find some food. Now, presuming that, if this is just, they were just, boom, plop there, 100 people right then, they wouldn't even start using the money, really, until there was someone who started growing food, or went out and hunted, or got some, a herd of beasts and started, you know, slaughtering one of them and then selling the food, that sort of thing. But what you're going to find is that the person who starts growing food and has access to it and has his own flock of sheep or whatever is going to be the first person that people are going to go to give their money to. And so that $100, if it's a dollar for an ear of corn or a dollar for, you know, let's say a week's worth of food to feed oneself, then you're going to have 99 people with $99, and you're going to have one guy, if he's the only one who makes the food, with $199. So you know that regardless of any changes or alterations to the monetary supply or to how it is our economy runs, you know that food is a good investment. And you know that you're going to be paid for it. Now, that is of course, we're running with a pure market example here. Now, if it's not quite a pure market example, if you have something like price controls put upon this by some larger authority, then that throws all that into arrears. Now, if you only have one person who's making the food, then he can charge whatever he wants to for it, and all of a sudden, no one else is going to have any money. So that's where the competition comes in on that front. And you would ideally end up with multiple people who are selling food or who grow it, that sort of thing. And then the price finds an equilibrium amongst the people who are competing to sell it at a lower rate. So, and of course you have water as well. Those 100 people are going to need water. Who's got water? Well, someone's going to have to build a well. Someone has to dig one. Someone's going to have access to a stream. Who has access to a stream? Is it a communal watering hole? Is it some sort of private area? Do they have to go very far to go get it? That sort of thing. And you find out that for those people in that town, there's going to be some people who can make money off of going and picking up water and then bringing it and selling it to folks in town for the convenience. And they'll pass along a little bit of their dollar to them. Then, of course, you have shelter. So those 100 people in that town are going to need houses. They're going to need somewhere to live or you know, some sort of a stable break from the elements. So there's going to be some people, clearly, that are going to jump up and be like, hey, I can build you a house, I can build you a shelter, and this is what I do it, and this is what I use to do it. So they're going to be cutting down trees, making planks, wood, that sort of thing, quarrying rock, making bricks, all that sort of deal, making shelter. So people are going to be spending $100 on the shelter as well. So and when it comes to heating, same deal. If the heating comes down to burning wood, burning coal, whatever else, whoever it is that gets the wood or gets the coal is going to be guaranteed that they're going to be able to make some money from those folks by doing so. So you look at those hierarchy of needs in regards to those 100 people in that town, and you know what sort of things you can invest in that is going to be, there's always going to be a return on. And you're always going to know that people are going to want that thing, and so you're going to be in a good shape if you hedge your bets and go after that, especially in times of economic downturns and transformations and things of such nature. Of the sort that I have introduced, and as well as others. We're talking about things like Bitcoin, and we're talking about these digital currencies, that sort of thing, that ultimately appear to be more means for control than they are really worth. Now, the convenience and efficiency of utilizing something like that is a red herring that ultimately will allow us to be controlled, because the forces, as we know them, the powers that be, so to speak, for some time it has been quite clear that the great power of which they've been invested has not been used responsibly. And so as we continue to address this issue, and as more people come to see it, and each one of those who comes to see it addresses it in their own lives however they can to alter the course and return the power to the people, is the more that we're going to see a shift and change in the way that governance is done, and that policies are implemented in our country and elsewhere as well. So so you have those 100 people in the town, $100 each. That $100 is going to go to food, water, shelter, and heating, and a few other things. You're going to get those basics. That's what's going to happen. After a certain amount of time, those 100 people are going to realize, oh, hey, these basics that we have, we found a baseline. They found some equilibrium. They found that there's plenty of people out there who are building houses, and they're doing it on a regular basis. There's plenty of people out there who are growing food, and they're doing it on the regular. Plenty of water around, and they have access to it. And there's plenty of heating, too. So once their needs got met, then they're living there, and they're passing around this $100 or 100 seashells, or whatever it is, between all of them. And what you find is that at that point, I'll step back for 1 minute. just to provide those basics, those 100 people with $100 each are going to be trading around their money. So it's going to pass from Peter to Paul to Mary, and then back to Peter, and then to Paul, then to Mary, and on and on and on. It's going to go in a continuous circle. And the $100 between the 100 people, that would be $10,000 total. That would be the actual amount of currency, quote unquote, in circulation. And so, as long as that currency doesn't degrade, like say for instance, if it was paper, it would just fall apart after some some while. But let's say it was in the case of gold. This is why gold has been considered, and still is in a lot of ways, the ideal currency. Because it doesn't even tarnish. And it's clear you can identify it much better, much more, how do you say, consistently. And the quality is determinable. So if you have, i.e. using like gold coins, and you're trading them around, this little community of 100 people, none of that currency in circulation, that 10,000 between them all, is going to degrade. It's just going to move around through the community from one person who buys services or goods from another who provides those services or goods. And then it's going to come back to that other person for the services and goods that they provide to others. So in this situation, you have that amount of money that is circulating around amongst the community, and this will go on forever, really, so long as those 100 people have enough children that replenishes that population. It'll just go on and on and on. And the money doesn't go away. It doesn't go into a hole at some point or anything like that. But it does when, for instance, they get all of their food and water and shelter and heating and that sort of thing. They have it down to such a level to where they don't need to work very hard in order to make those things happen. And so they find themselves then bored. Okay, well, what are we going to do? What do we do now? Is there something else about life that we can improve? And sometimes they come together and they're like, okay, here's something that we can, that benefits all of us to do. So let's pool our resources and pool our efforts in a way, or take a fraction of all of our efforts or a fraction of all of our resources and dedicate it to this thing that doesn't necessarily benefit a single person, but benefits all of us, i.e. something like a road, or let's say a community water well, or let's say a community gathering building, or a church, or a city hall, or some such thing. So if they're all on the same team religiously, presumably they could build a church. If they believe in a representative type of government, they might make a courthouse and a city hall. A courthouse especially, because there's going to be disputes between these people. That is something that happens quite early on in these situations. But you can see that the basic needs, this hierarchy of needs, it's just a consequence of existing as a human being on this earth, that you nonetheless have these needs. And there being so many people around that all have these similar needs, each of them, in their efforts to satisfy them, go to each other, and such we do so. And the monetary aspect of this, it gets funky when you start throwing in things like a currency that depreciates. Let's say like a paper, it just deteriorates after a while. That even if you have 100% faith in it, it's still necessary to print out more of it just to replace the stuff that falls apart. And also things like taxes. So when that group got together and they said, okay, well let's take 5% of our money. Let's take 5% of our seashells or 5% of our coins, and then we'll give it to this guy over here who wants to build a monorail in and around the town. And then that, since such a thing will help all of us, this will be a benefit for all of us, so each one of us should give a percentage, and then they'll go ahead and do that. This is a that's where things kind of get tricky, because then let's say you give that 5% over to that other guy, and then that guy says, oh well, you know, he ends up getting a big pile of money, and as a percentage of what it is that people have, and if you continue that and have it run in perpetuity, let's say through something like a sales tax, what you're going to get is that $10,000 in circulation is going to reduce. It's going to drop. So all that money that in that ideal situation we were just talking about doesn't go away and just recirculates within the community. When you add a tax to it, that money goes to where it ends up. A certain percentage goes in, ends up where it's taxed. Now, let's say you have 5% every year. So that's 5% of that monetary supply that just goes to this new entity, i.e., let's call it the government, for that matter. And this entity doesn't necessarily end up spending all that it has. You know, same as these 100 people in each of their individual situations is not going to go out and spend all of their money on, let's say, frivolous things. And someone who's building furniture and is a good carpenter, it's great to go and buy a table for $5, but you don't need to buy 20 tables. Someone goes out and buys 20 tables. Well, I guess they cornered the market on tables, but at the same time, that guy has 20 tables and he can only fit one of them in his house, so what good is it to have all those tables for him? He'd have to resell them, and presumably there's going to be people who want to buy it, but it's just kind of a, it's not really, what's it worth the time for in that case? Maybe the guy really likes tables and he likes to, you know, have them around him, but ultimately, if you look at it from a standpoint of sort of a rational self-interest point of view, doing so is just kind of expending your efforts in a way that isn't really much different from spending a lot of time knitting or going out and playing ball or fishing a lot just for fun. It's diversion, really. And diversions are fine. Diversions are great. And games are awesome. But they can be problematic if they, you know, anyway, word of warning. but when you have, so it's when that tax goes to that central authority and the people say, okay, well, you know, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Let's say you're supposed to build that monorail. You built the monorail. You're supposed to build the roads. You built the roads. You're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do that. Why don't you do this? Do this. Do that. There's a sense that, okay, how much is it that this central authority needs to make for the people before they're like satisfied? Is it that if the central authority builds all these roads, great, it built all those roads. Now do you still have to have a tax for that central authority? Or are they going to come up with something else that they can do with that money and then try to convince you that it's worth it? That is, we can go a little further into that, but we're getting pretty close. I think y'all can probably understand where this goes, and now we're actually getting into the discussions that we have at present in politics about where our money goes and where our taxes go and what the purpose of these policies are. But to go back to another point is that when you have that tax, the amount of money that is available for people to actually send a route, trade amongst each other, and spend within their community, basically it gets reduced. So if you have a 5% tax every year on people who have $100 each, What you're going to end up with is, if everybody's spending their money, you're going to have a 5% reduction in the available currency that people have. So instead of each of them having $100 each on average, and that being operable in perpetuity, you have, after a year, everybody has $95 on average. And then you carry that forward into the next year, and everybody has 90 or thereabouts. And you carry that forward the next year, and people have 85 or thereabouts. And the perpetual nature of this taxation then would require, okay, well, how are we going to, eventually, people don't have enough money in order to even facilitate basic commerce between each other. Unless they're petitioning the centralized authority to do something for them. So this is where that that communist socialist centralization ruse comes in, is that this community chest or pot in which we put money for the benefit of each other for specific things. And this is where the Constitution comes in, particularly here in the United States, is that it defines exactly what and where and when and who and how the money goes into, that the government can impose taxes, where the money goes, how it can be spent, that sort of thing. And that's what we have legislators for, and that's what we have our system of representative government. As a result, in order to take care and handle that. Besides creating laws, it's really, in a lot of ways, what are we going to do with this, with these collective donations, you might say. And since they're not exactly collective donations, since it's this government becomes an enforcer of this, that's where things get really, really dicey. Because it's no longer about, okay, we add, you know, a certain percentage of our money in order to keep these functions of government going, the basic ones, court systems, and security, common defense, and commerce, you know, that sort of thing. But it can get to something even more. And if they convince enough people that, oh, well, we need your money for this, then it, in a way, it's a self perpetuating prophecy. And if that money is used to manipulate people, as it has been through in many different regimes and in our country here as well, to propagandize them, to convince them, and you can see this all over the place. Kansas has put up billboards now that say, they're not directly advertising the vaccine, but it doesn't even say anything out there. I mean, about the injections they're given for, against the virus, ostensibly. But it says, don't let your last words be, quote, I should have gotten vaccinated. Oh, I mean, it tugs at the, at the heartstrings. They had some marketing gurus come together for this, and it's ridiculous. Thing is, that's all it says on the billboard. It doesn't refer to anything else at all. And you can see there's our, you know, tax money. That's where it's going, to things like that. And I say tax money with air quotes, you know, putting up, because sometimes it's not our tax money. And like I spoke in the last one, talking about MMT and the tax that is inflation, sometimes these things can sort of just, when you have a fiat currency, you print out as much as you want, or you can just, change a few ones and zeros here and there, and, government prints bonds, Federal Reserve buys them, and boom, there you go. All of a sudden, there's more money in circulation. Who gets it? Where does it go? We don't know. On and on. that's where things get really dicey, and corruption is absolutely rife. And I would argue that right now it is so bad that it's eventually we need to fix this, the whole system, and that's where New Economic comes in. But also, when you have that centralized authority that that imposes upon a certain percentage of what it is that people people get to have of their money, now what they spend or of their property value, you can add another assumption to this or you know, basic underlying principle to this thought experiment by saying that, okay, well, everyone owns their own property as well. But then, okay, is a tax on those on the properties? Well, sure, if it is, then you're getting the same thing. You still have 100 people with $100, and if there's a property tax every year that's 5% of their property, or if it's 1% or 2% or whatever, eventually you're going to squeeze people out of having money at all. I mean, it has to come from somewhere. Now, this is again, the assumption is assuming that this 100 people in 100 in this town are, you know, they're having kids such that they replenish the population, so that there's, you know, 100 people or thereabouts in that town. Now, if you want to change that, you can change that to a million, okay? You can change that to 10 million. And so long as there's a, if there's a boom in population, you know there's necessarily going to have to be some sort of influx of currency in order for them to comfortably do business and commerce with each other. Because otherwise, you just, I suppose that might be what they call a depreciation or stagflation or something like that. In any case, if the 100 people, if there's 100 coins, if everybody has 100 coins, there's 100 people, and suddenly there's 200 people, then there's only 50 coins to go around for each person. And, you know, is that enough? Maybe it is. I don't know. But say if it's 100 people with one coin each, and you get 200 people, and then there's, you know, there's only one coin for every two people, then are you going to be able to have a properly functioning economy as a result? No, you're not going to, because there's just not enough of that thing in order to spread around. And if that thing can't be necessarily be broken down into smaller pieces, such that you'd have with the dollar, you know, you have a dollar and then you have coins for a quarter and 10 cents and 5 cents, etc. You're not going to have enough of that particular currency for people to generally operate, even if a loaf of bread is, you know, 1/10 of a coin. If everyone only has one coin, then, well, that's not very useful anymore, is it? You're going to have to find some other solutions. You have to add something to the currency in order for people to, you know, utilize it in a basic manner. And so if you have, in that case, there's a couple different ways you could do that. You know, if you had 100 people and there was one coin for each person, and now there's, you know, 10 years later, there's 200 people, but you have the same number of coins, nobody found a gold mine, you know, around. If there's the same number of coins, then you could start making, oh, okay, well, here's a silver coin. Here's two silver coins will equal one gold coin. And then, okay, great. So then there's some silver coins around. You can float those about. Now, the prices might change as things go, but there are ways to work to work around that. But the taxes part of things is what takes that available pot amongst people and just simply reduces it over the course of however long a time, just progressively. Each time, each year that it occurs is the less amount of money that people have in general. But then we look at it this way. So if there's a central authority And it is taking a certain percentage of everybody's transactions, or let's say certain percentage of what they have for their property taxes, that sort of deal, that 5% each year type of thing. Now, if it spends that 5% every year and puts that back out into the community, that centralized authority pays those 100 people for work that they do, then that money gets back in there. So the money goes back out into the community if that central authority that does the taxes actually spends it. Now, this is something that that influences, I do believe, the tendency for governments to spend their budget every year. Because if they don't spend that budget every year, it isn't just that they won't get the same amount of money appropriated to their efforts, but that money will sit there in a savings account somewhere and do nothing. Whereas if it got spent, then it could benefit our economy and people's efforts. So if it spends back into that community and asks those 100 people to do something and pays them to do it, then great. There you go. Now you have that in perpetuity function again. So you have that those 100 people going around spending that money. Each one of them spends. Peter pays Paul. Paul pays Mary. Mary pays Peter, and on around, like that circle. Now Peter pays Paul. Paul pays Mary. Mary pays the government, but the government pays Peter. Then that's still a circle, and that's not yet broken. Now, some other issues come up in this, and namely, in this case, what is it that that government is paying people to do? Now, we can see that through what they did with the virus panic, particularly in the CARES Act, that said that schools would get money only if they could prove they were forcing this abuse on their kids in the schools. So they had to prove every 6 months that they were masking them, that they were distancing them, that they were basically treating them worse than, just about as bad as prisoners, at least for the 8 hours every day that they were in there. And so that is, and again, this is the sort of thing, nobody ever voted on this. No representative said, yes, I want, you know, them to do that. No, they didn't. And any of them that say that they did, I don't think any of them are going to admit that. None of them are. Because really, again, this goes back to the point I made last time, is that so much of this stuff is buried in the middle of a 1,000-page bill that no one even has the time to read. And whoever's writing this is really the arbiters of the abuse that the people have been receiving. And so that is who to find first and, you know, go after them and hold them accountable. And we'll see what happens with that, because it would appear, again, and it's a good point to mention this too, that the pushback is building still. It is going further. More people are seeing what's really going on in our world, and this is wonderful. And again, the judicial system is stepping up. Congressional folks are stepping up. Senators are all across the board. People within government and within the bureaucracy are starting to see that that they've been sold a load of bull, and they are clearly not happy about it. So I'd encourage them, again, to stand up for principles, stand up for integrity, and we'll get through this. And one of the ways to do that is not to take money to abuse people.
this is huge.
Because the government here, even though in this example you have that centralized authority that takes those taxes from folks and then spends it back out into the community, such that you do have that that flow of money and continuous supply of it, that does replenish the coffers of the individuals, so long as they work for it. Even though you still have that, the question is, what is the authority doing with that money? Now, ideally, it should be doing only positive things. It shouldn't be doing things that cause damage. Now, if that authority suddenly feels like, oh, okay, well, we're going to pay people to rob each other or something, or they're going to pay people to break up the roads or to throw boulders at each other's houses or throw rocks or something like that. I mean, quite literally, that's where the abuse really happens, is when this collective donation that we have is used to abuse us, is used to abuse the individuals, is used to demoralize us, to lie to us, or also all such other things. That's when you got to say no. Because if it's a benign authority that does that, and it takes that money in, and all it does is, let's say, it helps prevent some chaotic wanton abuse, through law enforcement, holds perpetrators accountable, holds abusers accountable for what they do, that's great. If it creates roads where roads are needed, that's great. If it maintains infrastructure like water, like electricity, or like heating, that sort of thing, then that's great. If it keeps the streets clean, that's great. These are all just purely beneficial things. Now, if it starts doing something that is, okay, this isn't necessarily, is this really beneficial? Because that's the thing that we need to ask ourselves when it comes to what it is that it's doing with our money. That's where representatives come in. So they're the ones that we vote in order to be up there and be like, okay, is this a good thing that's being done with our money? Does this benefit everybody, or does it not? If it does, then go for it. If it doesn't, don't. But that's the basics. And of course, from there you get to innumerable complexities, and it's not always clear cut. It's not always black and white. Most of the time it isn't. Most of the time it's gray. Lots of times it is clean cut too, and it is clear that this is a beneficial thing for people, but special interests, so to speak, can sometimes get in the way of that. So watch out for that. But so far you have that central authority with those taxes. If it spends back into that community, you have a full economic circle that still functions, and none of that money goes away. It just goes through the community and goes through it. And the taxation is, you might look at it in a way kind of like, in this sense, kind of like a gear that you put a car into. So in first gear, it can drive so fast. In second gear, it can drive a bit faster. Third gear, it can drive faster than that and more comfortably when it does so. The taxes can operate in a similar manner. I think I'll go into that some other time. It's an interesting analogy worth looking at, and it might have some real-world correlations, but we might look at that again some other time. I don't want to start, jumping into a potential analogy and just start, saying something that doesn't make sense. I hadn't thought about this before. Anyway, we're going to write that down for notes to look for later. But that percentage that it takes still operates in a solid economic circle. Now, if that centralized authority gets corrupted, then it's going to start paying people to do things that are not beneficial, which we can see with the masking, with the forced mandates, causing businesses to basically just be jerks and tyrants to their own customers, and treating their own employees like garbage, even worse than the worst examples that we were seeing before this thing happened. And you can see that ruins the whole operation here. And it's a straight line that you can determine that this particular entity, similar to individuals, let's say in the event that in this town of 100 people, that there ended up being somebody who cornered the market on those tables, or was the only one who made food, or was the only one who had water, the only one who built houses, that they could, by way of utilizing their money to stifle their competition, they could, in a way, monopolize and gain an undue control over the rest of the residents of that town. Now, if they did that, in order for them to gain that, they would have to utilize their money in a way that they were paying people to do some harm to others. So again, it comes down to that. What is the harm that's being done? Is there harm being done? How is that money being spent? What is the thing you're being paid to do? And this is one of the reasons that I said, especially in that Exorcism of Tyranny pamphlet, that the awareness of what one is doing in life and what one is being paid to do, to be aware of that and to stand for your principles and integrity, is absolutely vital here, because that is so much of what's going on. So many people are taking money and harming other people, and being ordered to harm other people with that monetary carrot dangling in front of them to do so. And unfortunately, when we've lived in a society where money is so necessary in order for us to operate, to pay for an apartment, pay for a house, pay for food, pay for everything else, we are distanced, so to speak. There is a great amount of distance between the production of these basic necessities and each of our individual reception of these basic necessities, that utilizing money is vital in our society, clearly. And so when that system gets corrupted, starts paying people to harm each other, then we know we're in trouble. And looking at it that way is a way of, in a way, in a sense, mathematically sort of determining where trouble arises in governmental intervention in an economy and a society. So it builds atop. It's a this entity, if it gets to the level of paying people to harm each other, and then it's clearly unfair because it's in a position where it was given the power to take a certain percentage of our labors and our money, that's where you can see that it goes wrong. And you can see that in other societies where this has happened in the past. You can look at the great examples of Stalinist Russia and Maoist China and Hitler's Germany, and you can see that, okay, well, what was really being done there? You can see that, okay, they're using public funds in order to harm people. And where did that, when that started happening, it's important as individuals to recognize so, and to be like, this entity that we vested power in is using its power irresponsibly. So looking at things from the level of that 100 people in 100 town with $100 each, and when you add a little variable to it, and you can see how things might operate, and knowing that it goes in perpetuity is important here. And what happens when you have something like inflation? You see that there becomes a necessity on the part of the money supplier themselves to replenish that well, that if it suddenly gets, you know, extinguished amongst these people, that they can have access to new money to put back into that economy. But really, there is something else going on here, and this is something I noticed over the last 20 years that was especially interesting. And it's that, again, that example of Peter pays Paul, Paul pays Mary, Mary pays the central authority, central authority pays Peter. So basically, a central authority, if it's taxation, just becomes another chain, another one in that chain, right? And if it's just another one on that chain, then that's fine. You still have a proper circulation circle in the economy, and on. The trouble ends up really coming along when, let's say, whether it's that central authority or it's others in there that monopolize a particular particular thing, that they take their money and they sit on it. That is the way to stifle and to reduce the power of everyone in that community, of everyone in there. And this is something that I thought was very strange about the investment world and the loan business. Is that you can hear things like, okay, the company Apple has $500 million on hand, just sitting on it. Okay, and some other company has a $1 billion in cash just sitting there. Well, why aren't they, if they don't invest it, and if it just stays in there, then that's taken out of the monetary supply, and there's really less that the rest of the people have to operate with, such that it might get to a certain level where some people are just edged out entirely, whereas prior you had 25 people who had $150, and you had 25 who had 75, and you had 25 who had 50, and you had 25 who had 25 on average. What'll happen is that when you have an entity, let's say if it's a centralized authority, with excessive taxation that doesn't actually spend it back out in the community, or in the case of it, spends it on other countries, or you have monopolistic entity in the midst of this cycle, what happens is you go from those different 25s that have that amount to the 25 that have 100, the 25 that have 50, to the 25 that have 25, and then 25 of them who have nothing. And then if it perpetuates still, and that central authority and or other entities or individuals in the midst of this chain nonetheless keep taking in money without putting it back out into the economy and paying people to do something worthwhile, then it's going to be reduced further, such that some people are going to be brought to a certain amount of desperation when they have nothing at the bottom. So I believe this is what's been going on. This has been notable amongst the last 20 years, and especially the last 10. And even now, more so, is that people are getting edged out so far that you have, that you end up seeing stats like 60% of the population works paycheck to paycheck. And that, this is not beneficial for us at all. Really not helpful in creating a better world and getting, advancing that kingdom of heaven that we're trying to put together here. So, a better way of doing that, a better way of that sort of thing operating is that, well, first off, you have to make sure that these entities are on the level, that they're not doing things like hoarding money. And why aren't they reinvesting it into the community? Why would you just hoard this money? Because hoarding that itself will cause harm, ultimately. And when you have any position like that, that great power requires responsibility. So there's more to be said about this. I think I'll get to it another time and continue on this this angle of looking at things, you might say. But I would encourage y'all to look at that idea of the basic example of 100 people in a town, $100 each, or really pick any amount of that, and imagine in your mind the cycle of economic beneficence that occurs in a pure state, like so. And then add some other variables to it, and you'll get to see a little bit better how this whole system tends to work. So, with that, I will leave you to it. This has been the Maverick Radio Hour. I'm your host, Man with the Plan, Garrett Tufte, coming to you from Kansas City, Missouri, on this Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2022, wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.